It is Thursday, March 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, British police identify the man who carried out Wednesday's attack near Parliament.
This attacker, while acting alone, was, in their words, a soldier of the Islamic State.
Talks on Syria's future begin in Geneva, and a new version of the Arthur Miller play The Price opens on Broadway. It's all ahead. One day after the attack near London's British Parliament, the city resumed its usual activities. Four people, including the attacker, died Wednesday during the assault. British Prime Minister Theresa May told Parliament the attack will not deter the country's values.
Yesterday, an act of terrorism tried to silence our democracy. But today we meet as normal, as generations have done before us and as future generations will continue to do, to deliver a simple message. We are not afraid, and our resolve will never waver in the face of terrorism. And we meet here in the oldest of all parliaments because we know that democracy and the values it entails will always prevail. Those values, free speech, liberty, human rights and the rule of law, are embodied here in this place, but they are shared by free people around the world.
I spoke with VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez about the investigation.
The Islamic State group, through its news service, put out a statement saying that this attacker, while acting alone, was, in their words, a soldier of the Islamic State. Now, British police have finally named this person, the attacker, as Khalid Massoud, British-born, 52 years old, had a very long criminal record going back to 1983. He had dealt with charges of assault, possession of what in British law is known as offensive weapons, meaning a knife in this case. No previous terrorist convictions or charges, although MI5, the intelligence service, officials say that they did know him, that he was known to them, that he had been the subject of a peripheral investigation on extremism. So he was not considered a main suspect, but they at least knew of him. He was on their radar. I'll also say that learned from police on Thursday that eight people have been arrested. Again, the belief on the part of authorities is that Massoud acted alone, but nonetheless, the investigation is very wide. Eight arrested, four of them in the city of Birmingham, and so that is the latest.
Apparently, there were a number of searches, I believe, in the Birmingham area as well as in London itself for, you know, to try to find information about the activities of these extremist groups.
Right now, British police are focusing on gathering as much information as they can. They're going through his phone call records, his electronic devices. Every slither of information is being scrutinized just to see how deep and how wide his connection to any extremist groups might have been. Of course, with the Islamic State now taking responsibility for what happened at Westminster on Wednesday, this certainly causes the investigation to intensify and to get wider, just to see whether he did in fact act alone or whether this was actually really a part of a larger plan. And so in the meantime, we see the area around the palace at Westminster returning to normal. Westminster Bridge has reopened. The House of Commons met again, began a session on Thursday with a moment of silence to remember those who were killed in this attack. And slowly the area is returning to normal, although it would be wrong to say that it has returned to normal. There is still a perimeter set up around the palace at Westminster. Most people cannot get in to that area yet.
And among the victims, there was at least one American who I believe is from Utah, was among those who were killed.
Yes. In fact, President Trump has issued a statement condemning the attack of what he called a great American. The individual individual you mentioned was, according to reports here, visiting London, celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary. And so that certainly adds to the tragedy and the drama that we saw unfolding in the city on Wednesday. There's the story also of French school children who were mowed down by this vehicle driven by, allegedly by Khalid Massoud during this attack. And, you know, details emerging of a woman who was also caught up in that in the attack, who fell off the bridge and was recovered, thankfully alive, from the river in the moments after the attack.
What impact has this had on the city of London in general? Are people, are citizens becoming more cautious, do you think, or are they going about their business as normal?
Well, you know, there's the old cliche of the British and their stiff upper lip and, you know, keep calm and carry on, and certainly that is the spirit visible. And it was even in the hours after the attack. I was riding a tube, went right through Westminster Station, which had reopened in the late hours of the night. It was hard to detect any difference in the way people behave, simply everyone going to work as usual, and certainly in keeping with the attitude that Prime Minister Theresa May in her remarks since the attack has promoted, and that is that the British will not allow evil to drive them apart, and will not allow evil to change their way of life. You know, their values of democracy and freedom are certainly under attack here, as we can see, but nonetheless untouched. And so the city, remarkably, looking as it always does, tourists out on the streets and Londoners going to work, carrying on.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Luis, for speaking to me on this busy day for you.
Thank you, Sarah.
That's VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, I'm sure there's continuing reaction to this story about London.
Absolutely. And we're seeing actually two names that are trending now. We talked yesterday about all the different trending topics from Westminster, House of Commons, London. And now we're seeing the two names trending. One is Khalid Massoud, who is the man who committed this attack. Social media sleuths are already trying to piece together who he is, why he might have committed this attack. They found information that he faced charges in the past for assault and weapons, but nothing, at least outwardly, that suggests any kind of extremism. And that will be something that investigators continue to look into, is where he falls as far as ideology and influence, extremism, and how he might have been influenced. The other name we're seeing is Kurt Cochrane, who Luis mentioned in that report, was the American who was killed while in London on his wedding anniversary with his wife. And so we see his family releasing a statement on social media, talking about what a great father and husband and brother he was. We're seeing images of him and his wife. Of course, when these unfortunate things happen, oftentimes the first place people go is to social media to try to find images of these people, and that's why we're seeing a lot of these pictures of them from this trip and other times. And we're also seeing a lot of condolences pouring in on social media, including from President Trump. As Luis mentioned, he released a statement. He actually tweeted out as well. He said, "A great American, Kurt Cochrane, was killed in the London terror attack. My prayers and condolences are with his family and friends." And also tweeting out that he spoke with UK Prime Minister Theresa May, who he called strong and doing very well. So the social media reaction continues to pour in.
Now, you must have a little bit, some lighter stories for today.
Yeah, I try when I come in to look at, you know, whatever's trending in the news. And if it's something heavy, I try to balance that with something lighter. And thankfully, today we have hashtag National Puppy Day. So a lot of cute pictures of puppies on the internet that people are sharing. But as we often see with these days, it's not just about kind of the surface of whatever it is. It's not just about the, you know, fluff, if you will. There's also a positive angle and an action angle to this. And that's advocates advocating for adoption of rescue animals as opposed to buying dogs, trying to raise awareness about puppy mills and the mistreatment of animals. And even some people saying puppies are great, but older dogs need adoption too, because they often sit there in the shelter while younger dogs get adopted. So even though it is kind of a nice, silly holiday, it does have a strong meaning as well.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. A report says new U.S. home sales are rising. The U.S. House Intelligence Panel weighs the future of its wiretap probe. An Israeli man arrested over bomb threats against U.S. Jewish centers. And WikiLeaks says that the CIA can infect factory-fresh iPhones. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Some people think that the universe is just a hodgepodge of various celestial objects, such as planets, stars, and galaxies. But over the years, scientists have found evidence that the universe may be anything but random, that galaxies are connected to one another with streams of hot, thin ionized gas called the Intergalactic Medium, or IGM. The W.M. Keck Observatory in Hawaii says in a press release that they have received a new device they call the world's most sensitive instrument for measuring these filaments of the IGM. Called the Keck Cosmic Web Imager, this device is designed to help scientists study the cosmic web in extraordinary detail, learn more about the life cycle of galaxies, and investigate some of the mysteries of the universe. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a new production on Broadway offers an exploration of timeless themes. As the fifth round of talks on Syria's future got underway Thursday in Geneva, the Chinese envoy to the Syrian conflict said the momentum of the peace dialogue will not be stopped. He said only a political solution is the way out of a conflict that has entered its seventh year. This round is supposed to focus on four issues: governance, a political transition, a constitution and elections, and counterterrorism efforts. It comes as the U.S. steps up its involvement in the fight against Islamic State in northern Syria, even as U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told a meeting of the anti-IS coalition in Washington that the Sunni insurgency, also known as ISIS, must be defeated, not just degraded.
At this moment, we are still in a phase characterized by major military operations. The expansion of ISIS has necessitated a large-scale military response, and our offensive measures are reclaiming areas in Iraq and Syria in which ISIS has had a large and destructive footprint. Our end goal in this phase is the regional elimination of ISIS through military force. The military power of the coalition will remain where this fraudulent caliphate has existed in order to set the conditions for a full recovery from the tyranny of ISIS.
That military effort entered a new phase with U.S. personnel airdropping local anti-IS forces near the town of Topka, about 40 kilometers west of the IS hell city of Raqqa. The U.S. has also intensified its air campaign as Syrian rebels advance toward Raqqa. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said some of those sorties killed dozens of civilians this week. Professor of International Relations at the University of San Francisco, Stephen Zunas, spoke to International Edition's Victor Beatty.
This is the most direct involvement the United States has had thus far in Syria, at least in terms of having forces on the ground. Previously, U.S. forces had primarily been involved in training and logistics and advising and usually way behind the front line. But now, not only do we have combat-ready forces that are much closer to the actual conflict, you're having just this kind of support of inserting troops in ISIS-held territory and other actions, which definitely seem to indicate that the United States is upping its direct participation in the conflict.
Stephen, at the same time here in Washington, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson hosted nearly 70 countries and organizations on the effort to defeat Islamic State. One of the things that he posited was the creation of interim zones of stability to help refugees return home in the next phase of the fight in Syria and Iraq. Would this be troop intensive?
It would have to be, because given the risk of attacks by both the Syrian government and its allies, as well as ISIS, there's going to have to be a pretty strong troop presence to protect them. And if they do that, these protecting troops, or whatever you want to call them, would be in the line of fire themselves. So it would be a pretty a major logistical undertaking, and it's unclear if the United States or other foreign governments would be willing to take that on.
As for the prospect of success at the talks in Geneva, Stephen Zuna said the track record for reaching a settlement so far has not been very good, as the process continues to be dominated by various independent armed factions with little incentive to end the fighting. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition, a new production of Arthur Miller's play The Price, opened on Broadway this month. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the play, starring Mark Ruffalo, Tony Shalhoub, and Danny DeVito, looks at the costs people pay for the choices that they make.
The play is set in the attic of a crumbling brownstone, where Victor Franz, a New York cop who abandoned his dream of becoming a scientist, has come to sort through his parents' stuff before the building is demolished. Danny DeVito plays the used furniture dealer that Victor has hired to appraise the contents of the attic. Arthur Miller wrote The Price in 1968, at the height of the Vietnam War. Though the play is set in the 1960s, Mark Ruffalo says it feels appropriate in the current political climate.
68 wasn't very different than 2017 politically, culturally. There was all these huge cultural shifts. There was a distrust in our government, distrust in our media, distrust in our political scene. There was a question about, a real serious question going on about capitalism and how good it is for a society to be so slavish to capitalism. And then there's always just the universal family drama that Miller uses as a framing to dive into a lot of these big questions and themes.
Jessica Hecht plays Victor's wife, Esther. She says that this production hit at just the right time.
You know, the timing could not have been better, because we were slated to do it a couple other times, and then it just sort of dropped into this time. Although Obama came a few weeks ago, and he said, well, if we had done it during my presidency, it would have been the same. He was so magnificent as a person, just because, just as you're talking to me and want an answer about what I feel, that's the way he is. He talks to you with such grace and such interest, and he seemed to really love the play, and his daughter was exquisite, yeah.
DeVito's character Gregory Solomon is just about to seal the deal with Victor when Victor's brother, successful Dr. Walter, played by Tony Shalhoub, shows up. Walter left to go to medical school while Victor stayed to take care of their father. And DeVito says The Price, like many of Miller's works, plays on timeless themes. What does a father owe a son, or a son owe a father? And what do brothers owe to one another or to their parents?
So it's like, it's very current, because it's talking about people. It's talking about the human condition. I mean, what you do to make ends meet. And it's not like, you know, all about the elite and about, like, taking money and sticking it in with bombs and guns and, you know, spending our hard-earned money with our energy. We should put it in the arts. because that's where we need it.
The play opened just after President Trump announced his budget outline that would eliminate, among other things, funding for the National Endowment for the Arts. Mark Ruffalo said that that would be a mistake.
Yeah, we have to fight like hell right now. And the one good thing about this moment is I see people coming from all walks of life joining together in this great endeavor of maintaining our humanity in the face of this monstrosity.
The Price is directed by Terry Kinney and is scheduled to run at the American Airlines Theater until May 7th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. Well, the rusty-patched bumblebee, this week, it became the first bee in the continental United States named for protection under the Endangered Species Act. That designation by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service sets in motion federal efforts to restore the bee's shrinking population. The bee once was common across 28 states from Connecticut to South Dakota, but has experienced a swift and dramatic decline since the late 1990s. That's according to the service's website, which made an announcement announcing, you know, talking about the designation. It said the bee now appears in scattered spots covering just 0.1% of its historic range. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On March 24th each year, nations around the globe observe World Tuberculosis Day, commemorating Dr. Robert Koch's 1882 discovery of Mycobacterium tuberculosis, the bacteria that caused the disease. The observance is designed to build public awareness about the global epidemic of tuberculosis. Tuberculosis, or TB, is the second leading cause of death from infectious diseases worldwide, infecting almost 9 million people and killing some 1.5 million. Prior to the advent of antibiotics in the 1940s, TB was one of the most feared diseases around. Today, the majority of TB deaths occur in the developing world, where the disease is closely linked to poverty, marginalized and vulnerable populations, substandard housing, and poor nutrition. This year's theme, Leave No One Behind, aims to make TB treatment accessible for everyone. This means that, as part of the campaign to vanquish TB, we must find a way to end the stigmatization of the victims of tuberculosis and end discriminatory practices against them, thus helping these people overcome the barriers that keep them from accessing medical care. By addressing the health needs of the disadvantaged, the marginalized, and people who are out of reach of the healthcare system, we not only improve their lives, we also reduce the number of infected people who will in turn infect others. And we will improve access to health services for everyone. The United States is committed to fighting tuberculosis. In focusing our efforts in countries where the burden of TB is highest, we support programs that save lives and foster a more secure world. Across the federal government, we have made this fight a priority. We continue to partner with the World Health Organization, or WHO, the Stop TB Partnership, and the Global Drug Facility to provide important support for TB control activities worldwide and achieve the world's vision with the adoption of the Sustainable Development Goals. By joining in a global commitment to stop the spread of TB, we can begin to free a new generation from an ancient affliction.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.